We'll skip into the July 10th, 2009 edition of the Rain Report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hello, and welcome to the Rain Report. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. An apology to those who weren't able to download last week's program until a couple of days ago. Our webmaster was ill, and we had no backup at this time. We do now. This shouldn't be a problem in the future. So, if you missed part one of this week's program about Solar Cycle 24, check out our archive page for that file on therainreport.com. Speaking of propagation, how many times have you tuned across the 10-meter bands only to conclude there's no one around except the automated CW propagation beacons transmitting between 28.200 and 28.300 megahertz? In fact, as this script was being prepared, there were several beacons ranging from Texas to Florida being heard in Chicago, but not a single voice QSO between 28.3 and 28.5. With the late arrival of Solar Cycle 24, the band will periodically be open, somewhere even after local sundown. But if you just listen for someone else to call CQ, you may conclude erroneously that there's nobody around. This passive approach results in lost opportunities. Just ask contributing editor and propagation writer Thomas Hood, NW7US, who writes for CQ, Popular Communications, and CQ VHF magazines.
Back, I'd say early 90s, and I was in eastern Montana, and it was early morning, and the sun was just rising. I turned on the radio, and I tuned across 15 meters and heard nothing, just a hiss. And I thought, the band's probably pretty dead, but I'm just going to give it a try. At the time, I was only able to operate in the Novice Tech subband on CW. So once the tubes warmed up on my old Kenwood radio, I started sending a CQ in Morse code, and I waited instantly. The moment I stopped my CQ and signed, a Japanese station came back. Now, I'm telling you, the rest of the band was deader than a doorknob. Why? Because nobody thought to go there and try it. But this guy over in Japan and I had a pleasant conversation on CW. It lasted for a while. Conditions were perfect. If you're not there to work it, you'll never know.
I'll give you an example that happened to me in college in the early to mid-70s. In downstate Illinois, Principia College. I tuned across 10 sometime during the winter of 73, 74, whatever it was. And there was nobody around except one station in South Africa. I gave him a call after he finished his USO, and we talked for a good half hour, solid signal both ways. Fortunately, today on 10 meters and on 15 and, of course, 20, you've got the Northern California DX propagation beacons helping a lot to tell us in CW where the band is open.
I know that it's the DX beacon network, I think, is what I'm remembering, but that's probably the official name still, I would imagine.
10 meters has many individuals and club beacons. They operate between 28.2, 28.3.
Again, since Cycle 23 began, the advancement of propagation studying tools and the amateur uptake in interest in propagation study has really opened up our eyes that the opportunity to work HF is right there before us. No matter what the sun is really doing, there's a lot more going on than we ever anticipated. The old timers will tell you that too. They'll tell you of stories, but then we shake our head and go, oh, those are just unique stories, sure. But the truth is, we're discovering that those stories are a lot more based in fact than we thought before, now because we have proof. As I've said before in my columns, we're all amateur scientists at one level or another. Some of us more so, some of us maybe less so. But we're amateur scientists because we observe what's going on and we report on it. Some of us report anecdotally. Some of us make a little bit more of a concerted effort to make those reports scientific. We're amateur scientists that are out there in the trenches every day unraveling what's really going on in the real world of propagation. And that's exciting. There's nobody holding you back from making brand new discoveries that no one else has made before. You got to get on the bands and work them in order to make those discoveries.
What are the chances of 10 and 15 meters opening up this fall?
Well, I'm watching the smooth sunspot cycle graph, and I'm looking at the smooth 10.7 centimeter graphs, especially the 10.7 centimeter graph that shows the solar cycle progress, and I'm seeing an uptick, a continued rise in the smooth monthly figures. The prediction is a lot lower than the actual smooth figure, and so far it's holding true that we're on a constant rise. And I think that rise is a bit more rapid than they anticipated. I'm going to go on a side note here just for a moment. The 10.7 centimeter measurement is not directly correlated to the true energy that the ionosphere is energized by. It is an approximation. There is a correlation of some kind, but it's not a direct, accurate correlation. And we don't have something that can measure directly yet that direct correlation. So the ionosphere may actually be more energized than we really thought it was. And there may be dynamics that we don't yet understand that's influencing the ionosphere and causing it to be more energized on a given moment than we thought. The science isn't done yet. That's why amateur science is so important, getting out there and observing what's really going on. My point is this. We are seeing 10 meters, 15 meters opening up, and we didn't think that they'd be open. And not all of it may be sporadic E, some unexplained things. We're just theorizing. What caused this opening? Well, I believe that there's energy taking place. There's solar prominence. There's coronal hole activity. There's a lot more interaction with our sun than just a solar sunspot. Sunspots aren't the whole story.
I'm speaking today with Thomas Hood, NW7 US, a contributing editor and propagation writer for CQ Popular Communications and for the quarterly CQ VHF magazine. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report.
The sun is a living, breathing dynamic, and it's always influencing the ionosphere. We have to unravel what those influences are. Nevertheless, things are happening, and we're observing them in the real world every day on amateur bands. This fall, in my best guess, and again, I'm an amateur scientist and I'm a reporter, I think we're going to see some activity happening this fall that's been long anticipated and should have happened a year ago. Maybe a year and a half ago. So we're in the uptick. The sunspot cycle 24 is rare enough to go. Now that the jet stream that they've discovered and the sun has reached the critical latitude, I think we're going to see things start to hop. And do I feel it's going to be a dismal solar cycle, one of the lowest in past cycles, like the last three or four cycles? I think it's going to be comparable to the last cycle. I don't think it's going to be quite as dismal as they say. I don't think that their forecasts have held true. They've made predictions three or four times since the end of cycle 23. None of them have been right so far. Why should the next one be? I'm an optimist.
You have thrown out some terminology here that a lot of my listeners are not going to be familiar with, especially new hams. Where would you recommend they go on the internet to learn more about some of the basics of the sun and solar propagation?
Well, believe it or not, the Wiki Encyclopedia Online, the Wiki pages, have some good introductory texts that have been compiled by various amateurs and scientists alike. I'd go to the Wiki pages to do a general reading up on radio propagation, solar phenomenon, space weather. There's lots of websites that are available when you Google any of these terms. I'm starting a podcast for this very specific topic, to educate the amateur radio operator on the ins and outs of space weather, the terminology, how it all works, and how it works in relationship to getting your signal from your station to the far station. Radio propagation, space weather, that's the topic of my podcast, and those podcasts will start in July. I have a website where you can find out more information on my podcast, and that's simply podcast.hfradio.org, podcast.hfradio.org. We tend to look at propagation based on the models that have been promoted as the official models of how space and the ionosphere and the sun, how they work, but we forget that in the real world, a model only works with averages and best fits of the data, but the data is all over the board. And so the ionosphere could be all of a sudden drastically energized by some unknown reason that we can't put our finger on, but that doesn't change the fact that the ionosphere has bestowed on us this great opening that nobody anticipated. It happens, and it may happen more often than we realize because we're not there to realize it.
The thoughts and observations of Thomas Hood, NW7US, contributing editor and propagation writer for CQ, Popular Communications, and CQ VHF magazines. When Thomas officially launches his propagation podcast, we'll let you know more when we know more. Before we go, we are sad to report the July 8th passing of longtime Chicago ham Art Householder K9TRG, who had been ailing for some time. For those not familiar with Art, he was the proprietor of a longtime and respected ham store in Oak Park, Illinois, called Spectronics during the 1970s. He sold used Motorola gear to hams in those early days of amateur repeater development. We featured Art several times over the past 19 years on these Rain Reports. We'll do some research into the archive and post one of those interviews later this summer. Art was one of a kind. His stories and enthusiasm will be greatly missed. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2009 Rain, all rights reserved. Now for Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, wishing you a very 73 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.